Insights on the Middle East with author and academic Avi Yorish.
I love the song. I could actually listen to the song for, I don't know, the rest of the day. Hello, Avi Yorish.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Good to hear your voices.
It's good to hear your voice too. Especially that you speak louder than the voices in my head. Avi.
Oh my, now we're in dangerous, territory.
Okay.
Avi, I want you to talk to us about the concept of Dimi. I want you to take it historically, and I want to take it all the way up to today.
All right, so let's take a step back. So first of all, Dimi literally means non-Muslims living in an Islamic state with legal protection. That's just that's the historical definition, and literally means a protected person, which protects an individual's life, property, and freedom of religion in exchange for paying of the jizya tax. So if you're a non-Muslim living in an Arab land, you must pay this jizya tax, and it is commensurate with the zakat tax that Muslims pay. So in other words, you are paying about the same amount that a Muslim would pay in the society. All right, so now this was historically applied to Jews, Christians, Zoroastrians, Hindus, Jains, and Buddhists. Those are the categories of individuals that got this particular dhimmi status. In return for paying this tax, you got certain freedoms. All right, so now, what did Jews get specifically? Jews got to practice their own religion and their own specific halachic courts. And we've seen this in places in the Arabian Peninsula. We saw this in the Ottoman system throughout the Arab worlds. Now, the dhimmis also got to engage in certain practices that were forbidden to Muslims, like the consumption of alcohol. Today, this jizya tax is no longer imposed in Muslim-majority countries. That really ended with the advent of modern-day nation-states. Now, I also want to put this in perspective, since we as the Jewish people tend to forget a very important statistic. Up until the 13th century, we had about 2 million Jews around the world. The vast majority, upwards of 90%, lived in Arab lands. There were only about 200 to 250,000 Jews living in Christian lands. So the vast majority were living in Muslim lands under this dhimmi status.
Okay. Avi, I've got a question for you. When we talk about cousins, right, when we talk about they are our cousins, the Yishma'elim, okay, that's what the Torah tells us. We are both two tribes from Abraham. Are those the Muslims or are those the Arabs?
That's a very good question. I mean, look, the ancient texts really discuss the Arabs, but at this point, it's hard to make that differentiation. We have over a billion Muslims living in the world. That, as it turns out, the Arab world refers to the Jewish people also as our cousins. And so we refer to them as our cousins and they refer to us as our cousins, but the ancient texts are specifically talking about the Arabs living in the Muslim world. They're not referring to those living in Pakistan or in India or Iran, but we've now expanded that definition for the most part.
I was just going back to this concept of dhimmi. Why was I under the impression that the appellation only applied to Jews and Christians being people of the book and therefore not applicable to Hindus and Zoroastrians, etc.?
Very good question. And that is where it started. It started with Christians and with Jews. And as the Muslim world continued to expand, as it continued to take over places like North Africa, Pakistan, the Caucasus, all the way to, you know, as the Muslim world expanded, that definition of the dhimmi class expanded as well to the other groups.
Okay, that is interesting. And in terms of that status, did that then allow you any measure of legal rights? Could you take action to enforce rights? I know you weren't talking about rights in the way that we understand them now, but I mean, did a Jew have locus standi in an Islamic court? If you were cheated in a business deal, could you enforce it? How did that status affect your day-to-day life?
So you would go to a different court. Again, these dhimmi courts. So if you had an issue with a member of your own, a landsman, a member of your own religion, you would go to your local dhimmi court, your halachic court in the sense of the Jews. Once there was a problem between a Jew and a Muslim, or a Christian and a Muslim, or between a Christian and a Jew, then you would automatically go to the Islamic Sharia courts.
So that is interesting. So you, although you were a second class citizen, nevertheless, you still had rights in that society.
But you were protected. You were protected, right, Avi?
Now, in theory, I just want you to know, I mean, we often think of this as a second class citizen status, but the truth of the matter is the intention behind it was to give equal standing under the law.
Really?
And it's a little more nuanced than to say that Jews and Christians were second class citizens. In effect, they were, but the intention behind it was to say, look, we as Muslims are paying these alms. You as Jews and Christians, if you also want to be citizens in our lands, you must also pay and have equal footing, equal standing under the law.
Wow, that is interesting. Very, you know,
Look at Turkey.
Yeah, but Turkey is a secular state. And
okay, but Turkey, up until the Mavi Marmara, I mean, Jews lived very protected lives, and they were looked after in Turkey.
And look, there's not a small Jewish community living in Turkey today.
Yeah.
As it turns out, my book is actually being translated into Turkish and will be coming out sometime in the winter in Turkish. And there is a sizable Jewish population living in Turkey.
Is that Innovation Nation, or Thou Shalt Innovate?
Thou Shalt Innovate, correct.
And you're publishing that in Turkey, Avi, now.
The book is actually coming out in over 31 languages.
True
wow.
story.
I'm very surprised.
Just to put in perspective, today, you know, Turkey has among the largest Jewish populations in the world. We're talking about 20,000 roughly individuals. So again, it's not huge, but it's not small either.
Very interesting, because I very recently did a course on this. I've got an absolute fascination with the lives of Jews under Arab rule. And I think it very much depends on the book that you're reading as to the information that you are getting. Because
like anything,
listening to you, Avi, it is so different. You're making it sound like it wasn't a massive, debilitative kind of status. You're making it sound like you could live a pretty normal life.
I mean, if you compare it to the way Jews were living in the Christian lands for the Middle Ages, I got to tell you, the Jews had it not awesome, but they had it pretty good in Arab lands. Again, it wasn't a Gan Eden. It wasn't a paradise. With that said, it's all relative. If you compare it to the lives that Jews were living through pogroms, through dispersion, through the inquisitions, Jews in Arab lands had it pretty stable and rose the ranks.
Yeah, that is interesting. One of the things I read about dhimmi status was that it exempted you from having to fight in the Arab armies. So, you know, maybe it was worth paying a bob or two to come home at night.
But also, I mean, if you look at like the Rambam, he was a private doctor to the Sultan. I think it was Suleiman the Great, wasn't it?
He was the private doctor to the Egyptian hierarchy and did very well.
Yeah. I mean, like it's
very well.
Yeah.
Because it's really interesting.
The Cairo Geniza that we have today, right? Which
yeah,
we see
right.
from Cairo. We have less than 50 Jews living in Egypt today, but at its height was a massively influential population. And a lot of the Egyptian movies still harken back to the Jewish communities that lived in Egypt over the course of many, many, many years.
So did it really depend on the particular ruler at the time or the philosophical
Absolutely.
Approach? Because I've read about when they were coming to pay the jizya tax, they were humiliated on occasion, not all the time, but some. You were slapped in the face.
Again,
I
just wanted to put in a big picture what the intentions were behind it. Certainly in locations and over with a variety of rulers, the picture was not entirely rosy, but nor was it rosy in places like Europe. Germany, the UK, sure. Italy had its fair share of problems in the Middle Ages.
Sure.
Avi Oresh, thank you so much for expanding our minds.
Always a pleasure being on the show.
Once again. Thank you so much. You want to go and check him out? AviYorish.com, JORISCH, and Avi, AVI.